Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman. I hope you had a chance to listen to last week's show, episode 71, which was part of my conversation with Tire Hub CEO and manufacturing executive, Peter Gibbons. Peter's been in manufacturing for 40 years, having had leadership roles with toymaker Mattel, global coffee company Starbucks, and a global paint manufacturer. And in episode 71, he offered some truly great learnings from his tales from the trenches in manufacturing. And today, we continue that conversation. There's a lot going on in a manufacturing plant. A lot can go wrong. How do you actually tame that disorder?
Disorder, that's a great word. There's a lot of entropy in a factory, right? A lot of things happening, whether it's, you know, the specs of raw materials, the vagaries of human beings, the, you know, machines that work that don't work. There's a lot of things conspiring to make it feel like an overly complicated beast that's hard to tame. The joy comes from taming it, right? From taming that disorder. And, you know, it's a few things. It's, you know, we've got to learn to hit schedule, right? So we've got to be predictable and reliable. To do that, you have to have processes that are right first time. So we have to use, you know, ingenuity and science and technology to improve processes, to avoid defects and make sure we have right first time at a much higher level. We've got to create standard work, you know, that we have a way of working and we all do things the same way until we find a better way. And that's where continuous improvement comes in, that, you know, until we improve something, we should all do it the same way. Standard work, as the Japanese would typically call it, Toyota would call it. And then when we find a better way, we all adopt it. So, you know, you want to pick a few key areas that get in the way of doing those things and attack them one by one. And when you do that, your plant becomes, you solve problems. And as you solve problems, you master how to make a product, how to run a line, how to manage people more effectively than other people. And I'm a bit of an idealist, Janet, when it comes to manufacturing, but I've seen it work, right? Manufacturing to me is a whole application of human ingenuity and science and engineering. And, you know, when you view it like that and keep driving to make this machine, let's call it this machine, this factory is a machine. If I can learn to run that machine better than anybody else, I will make more money than them. I will have a more successful company. I'll have a better workforce. You know, health and safety is another great example. The best factories have got world-class safety performance. Why? Because, you know, disorder, you know, causes people to do poor things. They don't stick to the way of doing things and they make mistakes or they cut corners because we've told them all that matters is production. You know, the factories I ran, we reduced in Starbucks, we reduced in Mattel, we reduced in ICI, we reduced our injury rates by 60, 70, 80% in these businesses because we focused on doing things right, not cutting corners, learning how to do things effectively, training people, you know, having leaders who took personal accountability for the welfare of their people. You do all those things, you tame the beast. And it's great. It's wonderful when it happens.
And it all goes to the bottom line, doesn't it?
It does, actually. Then you can, you know, you're a more successful business and it's based on knowledge. You know, it's based on knowing how to do this better than other people.
Mm-hmm. You told me a story previously about going into to start up a new program in a new plant. And, you know, you talked to a bunch of people in, a lunchroom or something, and you had a question about the window. Can you please share that story?
Oh, the broken window story. This is a great story. It's the best story. You know, I was quite young in my career and I'd been asked to assess this complicated factory that had some problems. And I had my MBA and I was so arrogant and sure of myself. And I had this fabulous plan. Me and my two engineering colleagues, we had this great plan that I owned and I led them. And I was so proud of this plan, Janet, as to how we were going to turn this factory around. And I stand up and I'm presenting this plan and people are glazing over and I'm dying thinking, why are people not cheering my brilliance? And a guy called Bishop, I'm sure that was his name, Mr. Bishop, put his hand up at the end and said, can I ask a question? And I said, sure. And he said, can you fix the window? And I said, I don't know what you mean. And he said, I'm just asking, can you get the window fixed? And I looked at him and said, I am sorry, I don't understand. And he just looked at me and said, sir, if you look over your shoulder, you'll see what I mean. And I looked over my shoulder and there was a big window in this break room that looked out across the rest of the factory in the countryside, and it had a diagonal crack right across from the top corner to the opposite bottom corner. It's covered with tape, masking tape. There was stains down the wall where water and rain had leaked in. And he said, can you get the window fixed? And I asked, how long has it been broken? And he said, 6 weeks. And I just thought, oh my gosh, for all that work I've done understanding this plant, I don't understand anything, because I never asked people what was getting in the way and how was the leadership acting. And I ran off and found the site engineer, a guy called Lee Lawrence, who's been a great and close personal friend of mine ever since. And I said, Lee, you don't know who I am. I need you to fix a window. And he said, well, it's probably in the job list somewhere to get it fixed. We'll get around to it. I said, no, Lee, I need a favour. I've got to go back in either this afternoon or tomorrow to talk to the next shift, and you've got to fix this window for me. And he said, I don't even know who you are. I said, no, my name's Peter. And Lee got the window fixed, and I went back and spoke to the next shift. And at the end, somebody said, are you the guy that got the window fixed? I said, actually, well, I'm the guy that got it organized. And he said, well, you're all right. You're okay. You'll be fine. And, you know, I'll just say this. I didn't say this to you before. It reminded me very much of my father. My father was a principal of a school. And he would tell stories about fixing things to make sure that, you know, parents had their kids educated in his school. And I thought, gosh, this is what my dad would have done. He wouldn't have had a broken window in his school. He'd have had it fixed. Mm-hmm. And it just, I mean, to be more back to business, it's if leadership can't even fix the window in your break room, why would you trust them to do anything for you?
Right. Yeah. In your career, Peter, you have worked for toy companies, paint companies, coffee companies. Are the challenges all the same, basically?
You know, at a certain level, they are, right? I mean, it's people, materials, machines, products. You know, in a coffee plant, you're roasting coffee and packaging it. In a toy plant, it's all discrete manufacturing, molding, assembly, packaging, painting, decoration. In a paint plant, you've got all these sometimes dangerous chemicals being stored and pumped and mixed, and then all the packaging lines. But, you know, it's all about people. It's... if I could put it this way, you walk into a factory at 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock is the best time at night. All the staff have gone away and it's evening time. It's not in the middle of the night yet. And there's just a feeling in a factory in the late evening when a factory is running, and it's the best feeling in the world. Well, one of the best feelings in the world. And whether it's a coffee plant, a paint plant, a toy plant, it's sort of the same, right? It's people trying to make processes work right first time, be reliable, be on schedule, make great products that people love, that you're proud of. And on a certain level, it's the same problems. Reliability, hit the schedule, make things right first time, look after the people, continuous improvement, be transparent, engage people. So on a certain level, it's all the same. The technologies are a little bit different. The processes are a bit different. But you're essentially trying to do the same thing.
Hmm. What's your biggest manufacturing challenge that you can remember, and how did you overcome it?
Well, so this is back in my days in the paint industry, and we were launching a whole new set of products for our biggest customer in the world, right? A big retail chain. And we had 3 weeks to make all the product, and we were going to swap over there. You know, we're going to start shipping this new product on a certain day. We had 3 weeks to build up the inventory to send this inventory out to this big retail chain. And it was a brand new product. We'd changed the entire range, new raw materials, new formulations. It was great. And we started making the product across 7 different factories. And by day 3, we started getting phone calls from plants one by one. Each plant phones and says, I've got a problem. The product's dirty. It's stringy. It needs huge amounts of filtering. There's something wrong. And by the end of the first week, we've actually had to stop production across 7 factories for this whole new set of products, about 200 different SKUs. And we spend the second week frantically trying to work out what on earth is causing this quality problem? And the only way you could fix it was to filter and strain the product, which was costly, expensive, dirty, slow. And then this guy called Steve Warren, really smart guy, he comes to me and he says, Peter, I think we've worked it out that one of the things we did to this product was completely change the surfactants in the paint. And surfactants are like soap. He said, I think I know what's going on. I think the new paint with all these surfactants are cleaning the pipes in our factories. So anything that's caked on the inside of the pipes is actually being cleaned off by the paint. The surfactant's doing its job. So basically, that's what's happening. I said, well, Steve, that's great. Well done. What's the answer? He said, you're not going to like the answer. Now, you can imagine the stress of this. This is our biggest customer in the world, $600 million customer. We're changing out the entire product range. We had 3 weeks to build it all. The first week, we made 50% of what we should have made. The second week, we've made nothing. We've got 1 week left, and this is a Monday morning. And he says, you're not going to like the answer. I said, well, what's the answer? He said, I think the answer is just make lots of paint. But it's slow and it's dirty. We're going to strain it. And he said, I know. He said, but my hunch is that we'll eventually have cleaned the pipes and the problem will go away. I said, that's your plan? He said, that's the plan. And we all locked ourselves in a room and we analysed the data and we thought it all through. We said, that's the answer. So that Monday afternoon, we fired up the 7 plants on these products. And we made, it wasn't bad product. It was product that had to be strained and filtered. So it was really slow and dirty and messy and producing at half the rate. And on the Wednesday, a factory phones up and says, hey, everything's good. The Wednesday night, another plant phones and says, everything's good. By Friday morning, we're in a meeting at 8 o'clock on the Friday morning to decide, do we launch on Monday as planned? And we basically said, it's a go. We're going to fire up these plants. We're going to make product. We're going to work the whole weekend. We rallied the workforce and every plant said, we've got to work all weekend. We're really sorry. Here's why. Everybody got it. Everybody was bought in. And we made something like, I think, I can't remember what it was, some ridiculous amount of product in 3 days. And we hit the launch on the Monday. We were ready. And the reason I tell that story is because the answer was to keep doing something that was a problem, because by doing it, it would fix the problem. And it was not the answer any of us would have wanted to hear, but Steve was right. He's a smart, smart guy. The plants were fantastic. And we held our nerve. And that's a great lesson in business. You have to hold your nerve. And we made the launch. It was amazing.
Yeah, that is an amazing story. And it just goes to show you that you have the expertise in your plant. Somebody's always going to be able to figure it out. And no matter how crazy the answer is, you know what? Sometimes that is the answer.
That's right. That's exactly right. There are, 7, 8, 9 billion people in the world. Someone somewhere knows the answer.
That's a cool story. You said twice in this conversation, when you're making a big decision and you're trying to get buy-in with your team, that you hold hands.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's so easy to be unilateral, right? And there are times where, as the boss, you are going to be unilateral. But the best decisions are made when everyone looks at each other and says, you know what? My destiny is in your hands. Your destiny is in my hands. This is the way forward. We're all going to march forward together. And then it's not about who's right and who's wrong. It's not about pointing fingers. It's not about, I'm going to be out on my own on a limb. We're in this together, right? We're in it together. And it's a stronger, better feeling. Now, there are times where, as the boss, you have to just say, folks, this is it. And you'd still rather get everyone to vote and say, vote's not the right word. You'd still rather get everyone to affirm, yes, this is where we should go. But there are, it's always stronger where you have a chance to have a conversation and you all look at each other and say, yeah, this is it. We've got to do it. It's more powerful and it's more fun.
Peter, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And I imagine that people who work for you really enjoy their jobs. So thank you very much for sharing your stories.
Oh, it's a privilege. Thank you so much for letting me talk with you and share some experiences and ideas. And it's great fun. Thank you.
I just love your passion that you have for manufacturing. And I hope in the future that we can chat again about your adventures with Tire Hub, because I think there's a very good story there as well.
Oh, we'd love to. We'd be very happy to share the Tire Hub story sometime. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Peter, thank you.
All right.
Peter Gibbons is a business and supply chain executive and the CEO at Tire Hub. That is our show for this week. Please check out our Twitter and LinkedIn feeds and subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and colleagues through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.